meeting of the Newport City Council's work session on March 19th, 2022. Could you do the roll call, please?
Goebel?
Yes, I'm here.
Kaplan? Hall?
Here.
Jacoby?
Here.
Parker? Bateo? And who am I missing? Missing somebody. Oh, Sawyer.
Yes, yes. Well, we do have a quorum. Ryan will be coming late, and he asks to be excused. We'll need a motion.
I move to excuse Councillor Parker from the work session.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Councillor Hall, seconded by Councillor Kaplan. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nope. Motion passes. I know Councillor Boteo is telephoning in. She's on her way back to Newport, and she should be with us very soon. And I know the absence of our mayor, Dean Sawyer, is still evident. He's recovering at home, and we wish him the best and a speedy return back to the chair of the mayor. Okay. We will go on to discussion items. City manager's report, please.
Sure. Tonight we have three items on the work session agenda. We've allocated about 20 minutes apiece for these. The first will be an update on the airport environmental assessment, which has been underway for some time now, and Lance will give an update of this process, and it'll be going through a public comment period and some presentations as well, and he'll talk a little bit about that. The second item on the agenda is the initial review of the draft pretreatment ordinance for wastewater. And this is something that will affect industrial water, wastewater generators in the city. And these are changes that we'll be making in conjunction with our new NDPE. I never get the initials quite straight, but it's our new discharge limit for the wastewater treatment plant. And then the last part will be an update from Derek Tokos on the where we're at with the transportation systems plan status. And so at this point, we'll go to the airport environmental assessment, and I'll turn it over to Lance to explain to the council what to expect coming forward with the environmental assessment.
Thank you, Spencer. And everybody can hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I did put together a PowerPoint presentation. Do you have that up, Peggy, or would you like me to share my screen?
I am about to allow you to share your screen, so you are now good to share.
Okay, did it come up on everybody's screen?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Thank you so much. All right, so just kind of a brief history of this project. This actually was identified back in 2013 during the runway 1634 rehab. And what happened is on runway 34, the south end runway, when the FAA was trying to certify the precision approach or the PAPIs, the pathway identifiers down there, they're four orange boxes. They weren't able to do that through flight check. And so what happened, flight check got involved with some data sharing, and there was a survey done that identified some obstructions off of the end of runway 34. So the FAA wanted to look at doing, you know, an obstruction study basically of the airport for the south end of runway 34. So what is an imaginary air surface? I know the word imaginary is kind of a fun thing to throw around, but this is what the FAA is looking at. And this is the Part 77 air surface. And I'm going to try to explain this a little bit So the primary surfaces on the red, these are the runways right here. So we're at, you know, 10,000 feet looking down. And then it goes into the transitional surfaces, which is right next to the runways, which would be your, you know, your obstacle-free area and stuff like that. And then it moves out to a horizontal surface, you know, that over encompasses a little bit more. And then there's a conical shape. So I kind of tell people, if you've ever been to any type of arena or stadium, if you're standing on the field or on the floor and you're looking up at all the chairs, that's kind of what being, you know, you are the airplane on the runway and you're looking up at all these chairs and you have to kind of fly out over those chairs or come landing in. And so that's kind of how I explain what this looks like from that. Those dark blue areas, of course, are the approach surfaces. And then if you look down below here, this is kind of the 3D model. So you have the runway down here, the red, and then you have a 7-to-1 area, and then your transitional surfaces, and then your conical areas, which are 20-to-1. And these areas become huge as the further out you get from the runways. For instance, your precision approach, which is 50-to-1, stretches for 10,000 feet off of the end of the runway and winds up being 3,500 feet wide at the very end. And then it goes a lot further than that out to 40,000 feet, but we're not worried about that area yet. So on the airport layout plan, you know, this is kind of what we see from page 3, and this has kind of everything in it. And this is what we see and what the, you know, some of the information that we share to the public, and it has all of the outlines, and it's just, there's a lot of information crammed onto a short space. So when the FAA is looking at the obstructions, they're looking at these, sorry, my mouse is kind of, they're looking at these areas here out. You can see the kind of the conical, not the conical, but the trapezoidal shapes here on the end of the runways up there. Those are the focus areas for the environmental assessment for the obstruction removal project. So using Google Earth, one of the FAA branch people built in this for our, this is Newport, our airport here. This is our Part 77 air surface for the precision approach when an aircraft is coming in to Newport on a foggy day. They turn out here at, you know, Boiler Bay. Basically, they pick up our localizer, our ILS, and then they start their approach. So you can see our approach area for, this is runway 16. It extends quite a bit out. I just wanted to give the council an overview of how big this area is, but we're not concerned about this whole area. We're just concerned about a smaller portion down in here. So just trying to give you guys some scope and size of how big these areas are that the FAA looks at. And this is another one kind of a, you know, from the west looking at that Part 77 air surface. This one kind of gives you a little bit of height. So a plane is taking off or coming in, and they can pick up the ILS on any points of these edges. And then when they're turning to come in, so they're using this whole area to line up for the runway approach to come in on 16. So as a aircraft is sitting on the ground, taking off of the runway, this is kind of, you know, this visual isn't here, but this is kind of what you have to kind of imagine. And this is the imaginary surface that you're building. So as you can see down in here, there's some terrain that you can kind of see and whatnot, but this is actually on the runway 16 looking west. And then as a pilot is coming in to land, this is their transitional area and coming in. So just kind of an overview of that. So what we have here is we actually from Google Earth did catch an airplane coming into final on 3-4. And this is why this is important, because of that 3,500 foot width that we're talking about. And you can see the airplane is coming in and he's trying to get lined up for runway 3-4, which is down over here. And then you can see the imaginary surface for 16 going out over here. So it's an interesting stroke of luck, because some of the trees, you can see that they navigate over, and you got to remember they're coming down. So he might be, you know, at 400 feet here as he's coming in. he gets lower, and some of these trees that we're talking about have penetrated into those Part 77 air surfaces, and we'll get into that next. So this is the overview of the approach surface for the obstructions. We've got the runways, the airport property lines, of course, and then anything that's in red has been identified as a polygon cluster. So that's part of where the EA is at, was identifying how many trees are in those clusters. And if it's just one tree that is sticking up, you know, 20 feet over the rest of the trees, or if it's a whole mess of trees in that polygon. So in the beginning, we were looking at this entire surface for runway 3-4 because of the PAPI issue. The FAA, once we flew LIDAR and saw that we had kind of a issue of clusters down here, they wanted to look at all of the air surfaces for the rest of the runways as well, which developed into these data points here. So another thing that came up was funding issues and how much the FAA would have for that. You can see with 3-4, this does encompass a little bit of the Pruner subdivision down there, and we'll also kind of go through that, how we ended up narrowing the scope of the environmental assessment. So this is runway 16. We decided to phase the planning for the obstruction removal to look at the most critical area, which are the RPZs for obstruction removal. Most of the RPZs, or runway protection zones, are owned by the city of Newport, as you can see by the property line of 16, or for the 16 and the property line here going north, what the clusters are. They did, the environmental assessment was looking at this tree up here to determine whose property that officially was on as part of the EA as well. And then, of course, this is the 3-4, the south side. This is 98th Street down here. This is Wolf Creek Destination Resort area. Our RPZ, our runway protection zone, is all owned by city except for this small piece right here, number 10, which is owned by the U.S. military. And then there's some other outlining areas that, if money allows, we will go after these trees, depending on what's left over after the construction cost assessment. So we have had several meetings with the landowners in the Pruner subdivision and south of the airport as well. About 5 years ago now, we did do some tree clearing in this area right here with Wolf Creek Lodge. It was about 5 acres that we had cleared down here on 98th Street. And this is off of the runway 20. So you can see this is our RPZ area here, and then our property line. And then this is all Hall property, which we've been in contact with those landowners as well. Excuse me. So the two different study areas originally in 2018, looking at the entire 3-4 departure area, it did pick up, as you can see, some of the Pruner subdivision and some of these homeowners and landowners over here to the south. After initial meetings back in 2018, you know, the city decided that we probably need to narrow our search a little bit, and or our view of what area we were going after. So we went with the approach surface, which is a little bit smaller than the departure surface. So that kind of cuts out a little bit of the Pruner subdivision, kind of encompasses it off to the side a little bit, which eventually we probably will have to come back and have discussions with some of the property owners in the Pruner subdivisions to get air easements in place. But this is kind of the assessment areas that the environmental study is looking at in orange. And then this is just a close-up view of those. You can see a better view of how that property and those obstructions were identified after those initial LIDAR surveys were done in the departure surface. And then this is the approach surface. So you can see it kind of took out some of those properties there. So we are currently right here in 2022. The FAA has said they have set aside about $900,000 for the construction and removal portion of this project. Coming up in April, potentially on the 19th, we're going to hold a open house for the environmental. And then that's when we'll be releasing or the environmental review for public comment is in April. So that's kind of where we're at. The potential construction portion of the EA won't be till 2023, depending on, you know, what the environmental assessment comes back, what type of, you know, information comes back from commenting. One of the comments that we already did kind of receive back was from Steel Strings. There is a marble murrelet area that's on one of their properties that is in the has been identified in the obstruction area. Some of the trees are up in there, so there's mitigation stuff that the EA will also address on how to deal with those areas when those trees can be safely addressed, I guess.
Okay. Lance, thank you. I would just like to remind everyone we do have a time constraint.
Yep, so, that's all that I had.
Okay, thank you. Spencer, do you need to address something?
No, I guess any questions from the council for Lance on this issue? And Lance, if you could take your PowerPoint down, that'll allow us to see everybody again. So,
Councillor Kaplan.
Lance, what kind of decisions are we going to be asked to make regarding this?
I think as far as decisions that potentially will be coming up would be for the grant funding for the construction phasing. I think this is more of just bringing the council up to speed about what has been done, what has been looked at. So you know, guys are in the loop and don't get, I guess, blindsided by, you know, why are we potentially getting all these emails from people. So that, and having a better understanding of what we're doing up here.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Councillor Hall, is your hand up, Dietmar?
Is
your hand up, Dietmar? Go ahead, Councillor Hall.
Okay, Lance, just a quick follow-up question. I think when you say FAA has stuff around like how to mitigate the, did you say marbled? I don't know the name of the
bird. Marbled murrelet. It's kind of hard to say. Yeah.
I think we would get questions about that. So if we can find out what the FAA's stuff about mitigation around that would be, I think that'd be helpful. That's all I wanted to say.
Oh, absolutely. And that is being addressed in the environmental assessment. And once that comes out, I would like to invite the council to the meeting on the 19th. If not, you definitely will be seeing the release of the environmental assessment for public comment.
I do have a comment to add. Lance, you said that in the future you would be getting an air assessment over the other adjoining area. You know, I would suggest the city try to get that done sooner than later while the trees are smaller.
Well, you're correct. We have the air assessment basically from the LIDAR. There's what's called air easements. And those are where the city has to negotiate with the property owner for what determining the value of the tree that or obstruction that has to be removed and how to mitigate that. So that really is going to be in David Allen's court quite a bit, going over contracts and stuff and helping negotiate with those property owners.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the city council? No? Okay. Thank you, Lance.
Thank you all.
All right.
Okay, next.
We will move on. Yes?
Yeah, go ahead, Cynthia. I was just going to say, introduce David Powell next. So,
okay.
Yeah, we're ready to do that. So we'll be talking a little bit about the wastewater changes that are going to be part of our next wastewater permit and the ordinance that is being developed to try to deal with that. But I'll turn it over to David Powell at this point, our Public Works Director.
Hey, thanks, Spencer. Hopefully everybody can hear me. Our pre-treatment program really protects the city from the end user forward to the wastewater plant. We know that our pre-treatment program is going to be part of our wastewater permit coming up. We're going to receive that in May. We've been proactive over the last few years developing that. The main players in that effort have been Andrew and Stephanie. And at this point, I'll just turn it over to them, and they'll walk you through the program.
Yeah, so Peggy, I'm going to try and share screen here.
Okay. You're good.
All right, everybody see that? Want to do things.
Yeah, it's...
All right.
This one's also in our packet, though.
It is.
Yes.
So broadly speaking, Rogue triggered a requirement when they hit 25,000 gallons a day, and they actually made up a large percentage of our load, over 50% of the load on the wastewater treatment plant. So we began regulating Rogue via pretreatment permits using the existing sewer use ordinance, and there's a clause in there about delegated authority to the Public Works Director. So we have a permit with Rogue, and even while we were writing that permit, we were forecasting to today where we're going to be getting a new permit, and this is going to be formalized into our new permit. So the permit we have existing with Rogue was done in concert with DEQ and will flow seamlessly into this new program. So what is the pretreatment program? So it's a federal rule that's delegated down to the state, and then the state delegates authority back down to municipalities that have these industrial users. The idea is to reduce the load on the facility or reduce a particular pollutant to a level at which it doesn't present a threat to the plant, to the water, or to the biosolid. So it's about reducing point sources of pollution before they get into the treatment system. Again, Dave alluded to our permits coming up for renewal. Because Rogue hit a trigger, we know this program was coming. We've been working for 3 years. Stephanie in particular has done a lot of work building out this program. So Rogue is what's termed a significant industrial user. They discharge over 25,000 gallons a day, and they make up over 5% of the dry weather flow. And Rogue has sometimes hit well above 50% of the daily flow, of the daily load on the facility. So they hit a trigger. What it means for Newport. So as we develop this pretreatment program, it gives us more tools to regulate industrial users, and these are all required. So what we did is we took a model ordinance from the EPA, and we had a bunch of conditional questions, and we kind of tailored the model ordinance to our program. We're going to be able to issue industrial permits through this piece of ordinance. We'll be able to conduct inspections. We'll be able to sample dischargers, enforce regulations, and to perform self-monitoring, right? So we will test behind their test to make sure that they're following all the rules. There are many steps to formalizing an industrial pretreatment program, and David hit the nail on the head when he said proactive. We've been working on this for years. We conducted a significant industrial user survey. We surveyed all industrial users in the city of Newport to make a determination about whether they would be regulated under this ordinance. We updated a municipal code. We're going to be updating municipal code to include a program. We used the model ordinance again. We created local limits. So local limits are, let's say we had a bunch of copper showing up inside our system. We would set a limit for copper on the industrial users to make sure that we don't present a threat to the environment as our effluent or biosolids are land applied. And an enforcement response plan. So an enforcement response plan would be if then, right? If you violate, this is going to happen. And it's all laid out in the proposed ordinance. So we're coming to council now to prep you, because we're going to be coming to you with a package of sewer use ordinance revisions, or a whole revised council, revised ordinance. We've already packaged up all of these pieces, and we're going to send them to DEQ for initial approval. Then we'll come back to you at an official meeting. We'll open up a 30-day comment period. Then you're going to vote on implementing the proposed code revisions. And then David has to write a letter saying that we actually did this and that we have the authority to regulate these users. So, you know, what they ask for you is, you know, not really a notice to proceed, but just keeping you in step with the fact that we're going to have to do a 30-day public comment period and kind of let you know who we're regulating. So Rogue is a significant industrial user. The landfill is a different kind of industrial user. And the fish plants will be reporting to us as a non-discharging significant industrial user. And the reason we're doing fish plants is because we need to know what's going on with them. They exist within our system, but it's kind of a blind spot for us. So if you guys have any questions.
Yeah, and Grant, if you could take down your PowerPoint so that we can see the full screen.
Yeah.
Questions? Councilor Goebel.
So I guess my question is, why are we interested in fish plants? I thought they all discharged into the bay. Is there a reason that the city's interested in that when there's no impact on the system?
Yeah, so there's no impact. Thank you, Councilor Goebel. There's no impact to the system today. That doesn't mean that there won't be a foregoing impact in the future. They are on what's called a general permit, and they discharge to the bay. Should any of their conditions change in which they would need to connect the city sewer system, we would need to know well ahead of time. What they'll be submitting to us is basically the same report that they submit to DEQ. So it's not a heavy lift for them to just send us the same discharge report, and then we'll just we'll keep an open permit, essentially a non-discharging permit. It says you have the ability to exist within our program.
So the city does not have any permits for the fish plants right now, right?
We do not, and
again, and there won't be any going forward on this. That discharge changes somehow.
Yeah, it's a permit. It says you're a non-discharging user, and the permit will give us a right of inspection and things like that. So essentially, we're just interested in the report that they're submitting to DEQ.
Yeah, I've got a problem with that. I said if there's no impact on the system, I don't know why the city is getting in their business. So if in fact the system has to hook up to the city, then I could say, well, yeah, we have a city, we have an impact, and let's address it. But until the city has an impact from the fish plant, let the DEQ regulate that. I don't see what the city's business if the city doesn't have any impact.
So that's a good point. I think that the counterpoint would be that they have a really poor reporting history, right? They violate on a pretty regular basis. We do share a watershed with them into the bay. It's an alternative discharge location for the wastewater treatment plant. So we share a basin. They're in our service area. Again, giving them a permit, again, gives us basically the option to regulate them in the future. Stephanie, do you agree with that?
I'm not wild about what you're saying, so don't count me in on that one. Yeah.
Understood.
Just to kind of jump in, so industrial pretreatment programs are all over the country and have been in place for over 30 plus years. And this non-discharging significant industrial user permit or even non-discharging categorical industrial user permits are a standard procedure by EPA, by DEQ, and by industrial pretreatment programs. And it's not so much we're getting into their business. Like, I can go to DEQ and pull their permits anyway, right? Like, you can ask for that. It's public information. But it's really that they use so much of our water, our drinking water. And it's just a more of a way for them, one, they can prove that they are not a user. So like, say we suddenly get hit with something that we don't know where it's coming from, they then can be like, hey, look, we have this permit with you. We can prove this isn't us. And also, like Grant mentioned, if there is changes in DEQ standards for the Aquinnah Bay, which may or may not happen, hard to predict, that way we kind of know what's going on. We can go more into detail about that, but that's actually in the model ordinance from EPA. It's pretty standard practice in every single municipality that has an industrial program in Oregon. It's not really like, it's just a very basic, you know, they all have their environmental compliance people, and I've spoken to them for different things before, and this is nothing new to them either. So it's just kind of like a, like you're getting CC'd on an email. Like we would be getting CC'd to DEQ's permit kind of thing. So
I don't have any problem getting CC'd on anything for the city. I'm just having a problem with the city becoming a regulator of the fish plant.
Council Allen has comment.
Yeah, so right now DEQ is going to do a conditional approval, send it back to the council, which will allow public comment. So if we move forward with the general permit criteria for the fish processing plants, they'll have a chance to comment on it. So the council can see what the fish processing plants think about it. So there's no need to get ahead of ourselves right now. Let's wait and see how the process unfolds and what the fish processing plants have to say about it. And then we can have further discussion at some point in the future.
I agree with that, David. I'm just saying I'm not on board right now. So if there's a problem with the fish plants, then let's address that. But it doesn't seem like, if the DEQ is already regulating them, I don't understand why the city wants to get in that business of regulating the fish plants. So
one final point. More importantly, let's see what the fish processing plants have to say about it.
I think the other thing too is, with this being a concern from the council, we'll make sure that we do some additional reporting on the basis for this going into the process for the council, so the council fully understands what our obligations are and what they may not be and what choices we have on that particular aspect. But we'll have some additional detail on our role regarding those entities that don't discharge directly to the wastewater plant.
Okay, I go along with that, Spencer, as long as it's not a foregone conclusion that we're going to do it.
Okay. And one final thing, the public comment will be doing a lot of outreach with the stakeholders that will be potentially affected. So you can be sure that we will make sure the fish processing plants are well aware of this ahead of time and have ample opportunity to comment so the council can make an informed decision.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? Please note, Councilor Bertheo has joined us. Okay. Spencer, we'll go on to the next subject.
Okay. Well, thank you, Grant and Stephanie and David, for joining us for this part of the meeting. And you'll be seeing more of them as we move forward on this particular issue. So at this point, we want to give a little update of where we're at with the transportation planning process and what the next steps are. And Derek Tokos will give a report on that.
Hey, everybody. Good afternoon. Derek Tokos, Community Development. I'm going to try to keep it brief. I have just one PowerPoint slide to share with you. And I'll just bring that up real quick. Hopefully you can see everything there. And really, I wanted to just kind of share with you where we're at right now and kind of what some of the steps are moving forward. Another key reason I'd ask that this be placed on this work session agenda is to make sure that you have the close to complete package of information as we start to move towards the actual adoption phase of this project, so that you can begin to read through this stuff. It's a lot of material. And I know you have limited time and lots of different competing demands on your time. So I wanted to make sure that well in advance, you have what is close to a complete package. So here's where we're at. We have one final meeting scheduled for the Project Advisory Committee. That's coming up this Thursday. They have on their list to review the executive summary, which they've not seen yet. It's in their packet, just as it is in yours, but they haven't had a chance to review and discuss that. They do have the what we call the adoption draft of the plan that was received in advance of their last meeting. They had a chance to discuss that and some of the key projects in that, but that's still on the table. And then there's a list of pending changes. And so that list of pending changes is going to build up. And what it is it's we're placing on that list changes we want the consultant to pick up in their final full comprehensive update to the document. So that'll grow and evolve as we go through the hearings process. So assuming the committee makes a recommendation on Thursday that this is in good enough shape to begin the legislative adoption process, they will forward it to the Planning Commission, who will meet on the 28th of March. And this is when it's introduced to the Planning Commission in this form. The commission would then initiate the legislative adoption process. That has to be done by motion. And then once they've done that, that's our cue to provide the state the required 35-day notice before the first evidentiary hearing. This is a legislative process, so it's not quasi-judicial. You are free to chat with anybody who has an interest. That's all fair game in a legislative process. The only thing you guys need to be concerned about, to the extent it's even relevant, would be a actual or potential conflict of interest, which tends to be on the financial side of it. But unlike the appeal hearing we have with the animal shelter, which is coming up on the 4th, this is legislative. You have a lot of liberty to chat with folks about what's in the package, what they like about it, what they don't like about it. That's all fair game. This provides, the Planning Commission would then have a couple of work sessions where they can take a look at this and request some changes. And I'll be working this into ordinance form for them. And so there's a tech memo that has some of the code changes that goes along with this. So that gets worked into that as well. So they'll have a couple of work sessions in April to kind of work through those pieces. And then they would have their first hearing on May 9th. And if necessary, they would have the ability to have a second hearing on May 23rd. We would then have room for city council work sessions. May 16th might make sense because that would give you a chance to see what it looks like after the first Planning Commission hearing, and you'd have a sense of kind of where the commission's at with it after their first hearing. And then we're looking at June 20th being kind of the first public hearing before city council. Yeah, as this is a legislative process, you're not on any specific timeline within which you need to complete this. Otherwise, we want to move this to a point of conclusion in a timely manner. But you're not on this has to be done by this date kind of schedule. As I mentioned, the reason we're doing the list of pending changes is we are running up against it with the budget. So that's why we have sufficient budget for one full comprehensive set of revisions, but that's about it with respect to the TSP. Now, we will update the project website once the project advisory committee makes its recommendation so that it has all of the current information on it, and we'll be able to have that updated again coming out of the Planning Commission phase of the project. And so that's kind of really, where we're at right now. I have asked that they send over the GIS data layers. That way we'll be in a position to maybe do some custom mapping. I know there are, when you look at the documents, there are a lot of projects, they cover a lot of ground, and sometimes it's hard to piece things together. So once I have those from the consultant, which should be later this week, we'll be in a position where we can do some custom mapping in certain areas. And hopefully that, that will be a resource for you as we move into the hearings phase, so you can make, feel comfortable that you understand how the different pieces of this puzzle fit together. But anyway, that's the extent of what I had for you today. As we move through this, please feel free to individually drop me a note if you have any questions about what you see in the document, or if you'd like additional information, I'm happy to provide that to you. About what I have right now, if you have questions.
Councilor Kaplan.
Thank you. Derek, are the project advisory meeting, is that open to the public or via Zoom or?
It is open to the public. It'll be video conferenced. We have sent that notice out to everybody we had on the stakeholder list, which we've developed through this whole process, where people had indicated to us they wanted to be, you know, kept informed. So they all have that with instructions to reach out to us if they want to participate so that we can provide them the link.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Councilor Bateo.
I just have a question. If we need to contact you, Derek, can we send you the email directly to you, or also we have to copy Spencer?
Please feel free to copy Spencer. But yeah, if you could just send me an email with your questions or request for additional information.
Okay, thank you.
That'd be great.
I don't mind reducing my email list here. So if you just want to send it to Derek, that's good with me. So.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Okay. Anyone else? Nope. You're right, Derek. There's a lot of information in there. A lot.
Yeah, there is. So just want to make sure you had that with lots of lead time.
Okay. Well, okay then. Thank you, Derek. So, Spencer, should I go ahead and close this work session and go into executive?
Well, what we need is a motion to go into executive session, supported by a second council member. And if that's approved, we can go into executive session, and you can close out the public, or you can close out the work session.
Do I have such a motion?
I can make it. I move to hold an executive session pursuant to ORS 192. I move to close the city council work session, sorry, and to hold an executive session pursuant to ORS 192.6602E related to real property transactions immediately following this work session.
Second.
It's been moved by Councillor Hall, seconded by Councillor Bateo. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none. Unanimous vote. We are now in executive session.
Wait a minute. Okay. I have to change some things. And
so we'll need a few minutes for Peggy to close out the work session and open up the executive session, and to make sure only those that should be in the executive session are in the executive session. Derek and Robin would be the two staff members that are to be part of the executive session.
Okay, we shall await confirmation.
While we're waiting, I have a special visitor at the hotel as of yesterday until tomorrow. Callie.